You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And speaking of books, I have two of my own books coming out this spring and summer. Princess Charming is a picture book, which debuts on April 19th, and Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, comes out on July 1st, and it is truly a labor of love. I hope you'll pre-order, order, and join me on tour as I go across the country. You can find out more at zibbyowens.com or bookendsmemoir.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at zibbyowens because I always post about everything. Enjoy the show. Hannah Lilith Asadi is the author of The Stars Are Not Yet Bells, a novel. She teaches fiction at the Columbia University School of the Arts. Her first novel, Sonora, received the Rosenthal Family Foundation Award in Literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters and was a finalist for the Penn Robert W. Bingham Prize for Debut Fiction. In 2018, she was named a National Book Foundation 5 Under 35 honoree, which I will now never get. She lives with her family in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome, Hannah. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss The Stars Are Not Yet Bells.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are a beautiful, lyrical, like poetic writer. I really appreciate your writing style and very excited to discuss your book. So
thank you. Thank you so much.
Can you tell listeners what your book is about?
Sure. It's about a woman who has dementia, and as she's succumbing to her illness, she begins to live more and more in her past and in a beside a lover who has been long dead for many decades, right? So the memory of their relationship sort of resurfaces and reemerges. And simultaneously, she begins to see these sort of strange metaphysical blue lights that occupy the island where she has lived with her husband for many years. So that's, I'm not very good at this, the elevator pitch, but that's the general summary.
No, you did wonderfully. I have a passage that I had just even from the beginning. I just want to, you know, why don't I just read the first part, just the first page even, which okay. I have online. But it says, "It is not yet the end. Moss descends from the oaks, thick as curtains, veiling the night secrets from the living. A wild mare and her foal are out to feed before the dawn. Seagulls bark their hunger at the sky. And Lyra, our island, remains above the sea. The ocean has not engulfed all this, even though I have woken from that dream I've had again and again over the decades. In last night's rendering, after the island has burned and sunken into the waters and all the stars had fallen into the Atlantic, I could still swim. And beneath the surface, wandering among the blue constellations like a mermaid, at last I found Gabriel." So good. Beautiful. I just love your writing. I bet. Yeah. Okay. Take me back and tell me about how you became a writer. Why you, how do you, how, your style, your training, this way of telling this particular story, all of that.
Sure. So I think I was always writing just sort of little fictions ever since I was a child. Primarily when I would get into trouble or something, I would write a little story. I think my father used to tell me I did this. But anyways, I wasn't seriously inspired until high school. An English teacher assigned sort of a creative writing response assignment to The Sound and the Fury, where we had to write a chapter from Cady Thompson's perspective. And that was kind of the first time that I ever wrote fiction. I'm sure it was awful, but that was my first piece of fiction. And then, you know, I wrote, but more I would say like journal wrote, right? Until I was in college and I studied creative writing as an undergrad in addition to Middle Eastern literature. And when I graduated, I was writing stories and I knew I wanted to be a writer, and I still didn't really know how to formalize that desire yet. And I did my MFA, and that, you know, both. Someday it definitely helped me. I think there were some hindrances to it only because of its cost, but it certainly did help kind of formalize my education and also just, you know, push me toward the right people to help me actually become a professional. And yeah, so that was kind of the progression there. And after my MFA, I published my first book, Sonora. And once that was out, I had been working on a few different projects, and none of them, I have this tendency to kind of like start something and it'll get to a certain point, and then I realize it's just not moving anymore. And that was happening with a lot of things kind of while I was waiting for my first book to come out. So in the month afterward, my mom and I had gone to visit my great aunt, who has since passed. And I had recently seen this picture of my grandmother with this man whom none of us knew who he was, although my great aunt, I think, did know who he was. So it was sort of this interesting mystery that I wanted to write about like the person that you may, who got away, as it were. And also just, I've always been interested in memory and in time and certainly in mortality. I think most writers are interested in the latter. And so I thought Alzheimer's would be such an interesting condition to try to inhabit. So yeah, that was sort of the genesis of this particular book. And then it evolved, you know, in strange ways from there and took on a life of its own. Obviously, my parents were not in the jewel industry and didn't live on a strange island off the coast of Georgia. So that was all its own, you know, how a book takes on its own life.
But. And have you always had, you know, you said most authors are focused on mortality, which I share with you. I feel like the movie with Julianne Moore, did you ask Alice, is that what it's called? Or ask
Still Alice? Yeah. Still no, Alice? I haven't seen it.
Oh my gosh, you have to watch it.
I should probably watch it. You know, I avoided things that like felt like they were in similar territory because I was afraid that I would try to emulate too much. But tell me, what were you going to say?
Well, no, just, you know, it's also sort of an ode to language, right? It's in the power of our command over language, which is one of the things that Alzheimer's affects, right? It's your ability to even communicate in the same way. I don't know. I am haunted by that movie. I think about it more than any other movie, particularly when I am tired and I can't even find the right words, right? And I wonder, and then like novels like yours, like where you really go into that and you, like memory and language and all of our mental facilities are they're just beyond our grasp. Do you know what I mean? Like it's so easy for it to all just go away.
I know. Yeah, I mean, obviously this book, you have to sort of suspend disbelief a little bit because her language stays pretty, she has command of language.
Well,
narrator until the end. But one of the things I always found really upsetting, like reading my grandmother's letters to my grandfather, is that she was very articulate and a very elegant and sophisticated writer, although not formally trained, obviously. But toward the end, she had Alzheimer's as well. And she just started repeating herself all the time and misspelling words and forgetting how to spell and just literally losing language. Mm-hmm. And that was you can witness it on the page in a way that, you know, I wasn't there to witness her, but it is so sad that it's so easily lost.
My grandmother's both at the very end, you would sit with them and they would like say, it's like a record or something on replay.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like you're younger than me. Maybe you don't even know what I'm talking about. But, you know, like where it just like keeps replaying like all this, you know, like the track just loops. And you're like, wait, you just said that. Wait, you just said that. What's going on? And you're like, am I losing my mind or?
Yeah. And it's so interesting what they repeat too, right? Like,
yes.
And, you know, why? But yeah, we don't know enough, certainly. And maybe one day we will know more about the brain. But yeah, it's fascinating and sad at the same time. So
did you do a lot of on the research side?
You know, I think I did more research than I give myself credit for, but it's been so long. You may know from talking to as many authors as you do and being an author yourself, how long the publishing industry can take. So sometimes it feels faint to me, but I did do some research. I wouldn't say it was heavy, right? Because I really wanted this to be her own story and it's lyrically driven, as you said. But I did do research into sort of, you know, how the condition manifests itself, just to hopefully get some of the moments right. So like there are moments when it's sunset, sort of those liminal hours where she is worse. And I think that is manifest in the book, which I think is called sunsetting, right? Mm-hmm. So I did do some research, and I did a lot of research into the treatment of mental illness in the 50s and 60s since mm-hmm. she undergoes electroshock treatment, and also sort of the advent of pharmaceutical drugs to treat depression. And so there was research, just like, I don't think I read too many books on the matter. It's a lot of, I would never hate to admit this, but a lot of Googling. And, but I did read about Cumberland Island and the Carnegies there as well, since that's sort of inspired the setting of the book. So
you should read this new book by Lee Kravitz called The Confessions of Sylvia P. I think that's what it's called. Some about Sylvia Plath. And it has a whole section of her electric shock treatments.
Oh, yeah. I would love to. I'll pick it up. Thank you.
That was really good. So you said it took a long time. When did you start writing this? And when, like, what was the whole trajectory? And did you use the same publisher as your previous book? Or what, did you go at it with it all over again? Or tell me about that.
Yeah, no, it was a different publisher. My first book was published by an independent house. And this one was published by Riverhead. And they did a beautiful job, obviously. But there were, you know, I think a lot of people were delayed. I sold it in the fall of 2018. So, and it came out in January. So you can do the math there. A few years, but I think just so much was delayed. I think first there was the elections and, you know, before COVID hit, and I think a lot of publishers didn't want to come out in that season because they knew it would be dense with books that were more like politically relevant, which, you know, makes sense. And then COVID delayed so much. And then, you know, it just, once seasons got backed up more and more. So it feels like I've lived with this, yeah, for a long time, even though the writing of it has been done also for a while. But there is a way in which it's not, you don't fully release it or relinquish it or something until it's out in the world. Like, I think that's just, yeah, it's just the nature of the beast. So it's been an interesting few months to finally, you know, begin the process really of letting it go. Just like, okay, now it has a life of its own. There's nothing I can do about it. So
yeah. It's like kids going off to college or something.
Sure. Yeah. I only have a toddler, so I'm not, there yet, but I'm sure that hopefully I'll be somewhat prepared, but probably not.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, grown-ups. The Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week.
Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. So sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
What are you working on? I was going to say, what are you working on now? But then with the toddler, you never know. So are you?
Yeah, sure. No, I am. It's funny. It's interesting. I was working on something for quite a while I was waiting for this to be published. And similar to my last experience, I've put it aside for the time being. Yeah. I'm not sure if I need some space from it to see if it will begin moving in a way. Like there's something very, I don't know, mystical about the experience to me. And I feel like if it's not taking on a life of its own, maybe it doesn't want a life kind of thing. So I started something new that's actually just really material that maybe I haven't been wanting to deal with or ready to deal with for a really long time. And now I feel maybe sort of ready. It's intimately connected with my life here in New York, and which I feel like I always feel like it's maybe ending, but I'm not sure. So I'm working on that. So that's anyway, I can't talk about it more than that, but it's new for now. And it'll be a third novel. And I'm also doing some research into maybe trying to write a screenplay and doing research on a historical figure that I'm very interested in. So that's something new creatively that I'm always, maybe you can tell I'm the visual writer. And mm-hmm. So I feel like I've never really applied that to anything else but prose. So it might be interesting to try, but I don't know yet. We'll see. So it's all I'm in the cauldron still. And I have a toddler running around screaming. I guess, you know, times four, right?
Well, I don't have toddlers anymore.
Yeah. But you have four children?
I have four children, but they're old. Yeah. Okay. I mean, not so old, 7, 8, and 4. Yeah. Children. But the toddler days, I don't know. It's funny because now I talk to people like you and I'm like, oh, well, how could she possibly get anything done? But at the time I was like, I still wanted to get everything done and I still was getting stuff done, but it was just harder. I think it's not until they get a little older that you're like, wow, that was almost impossible. Like, why did I try so hard? Like, the time was going to pass. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous, but I don't know. All to say, I have so much respect for people working with small children at home, especially now, and especially in a creative thing where you have to, like, access this part of your brain to, you know, get into a certain space to write and produce and all of that. And then there's constant distraction, so I don't know.
Yeah, and trying to cherish it while at the same time getting things done. I think that's the real psychological or existential part. Like, I know this won't last forever and it's adorable. And also, like, yeah, who am I?
Honestly, modern day life is just not particularly well set up for parenthood. I mean, at all, really. Like, you have to stop everything and you have to be patient and you have to allow for tantrums and you can't be in control of your time, and you know, and yet everything else is so, you know, iCal blocked off everything. I don't know. It's like a joke. Kids just make a joke of all the scheduling and, you know, all the other stuff you might be trying to do. So
yeah, that's a good way of putting it. They make a joke of it. That's for sure.
I like how you put that you're in the cauldron. It's a pretty dark place, but maybe you're making something really delicious in the cauldron, like some great tomato soup or something.
Yeah. I think, sadly, I think it has to be a little bit dark for me to even do it. So we'll see. Hopefully one day we'll be able to talk about that one. Well, you know, it's, I'm just being a little more forgiving of myself, as you said, right? Because these are the toddler years, and hopefully I'll have more time one day.
Do you have a writing partner? Like, do you ever show your work to anybody or read it out loud? Or
You know, at a certain point I show it usually to my mom, and I have a few trusted friends, a few readers who always, or at least in the past two books, have read early drafts of my book. But pretty soon thereafter, if I feel like I've been with it long enough and revised it, I send it to my agent. But there are a few people who are both writers also that I kind of trust with early work. But I don't have a writing group, which may be a good idea to hold me a little more accountable, but I just don't see how I can be accountable to anybody else right now. So
you have a boss baby at work, so
exactly.
What advice would you have for aspiring authors?
I think the real only thing that I can say, I mean, there's so many paths to publishing and it really looks different for everybody. I think just, like, you can't give up, you know, if this is what you want to do. It's not an easy life and there's so much rejection and so much struggle. And I think that's the only rule, that you just don't give up on yourself and on your work, and that's it. The rest of it you'll figure out.
Love it if you want to. Amazing. So. Well, thank you for this beautiful book and the conversation and allowing me the opportunity to feel grateful for the memory I still have while I still have it.
Good.
You know, holding on to that, trying to shove it in there so it's not evaporates. And, you know, we're also lucky for the time we have when we're able to be at our most productive before other forces are at work. So it's a good reminder. And
thank you.
The power of love. So
there's always that. Thank you so much for having me and hope to meet you one day in person.
You too. Where are you, by the way? Where are you based?
I'm in Brooklyn, but you know, it seems to be a debatable. we're not quite sure what's next, but we're in Brooklyn at the moment. Are you in the city?
I'm like, she's either in New York or like Santa Fe, because you have like the archways and
I know. It's funny because I am from Arizona, and this apartment that we're actually subletting, we lived here for many years and went to Arizona and came back, and we've sublet this for the semester because I'm teaching at Columbia. It does have a very Southwestern feel, and it's totally random, but it is sort of an interesting reminder of where I come from. So
Where in Arizona did you grow up?
I'm in the Phoenix area. So we'll see. We may, you know, it's a very complicated relationship I have, because when I'm out west, I miss it the city. And when I'm here, I miss it out there. So maybe one day I'll figure out how to have both. But at the moment, certainly this past winter has made me miss Arizona for sure.
My mom and stepdad basically retired out there. And so they're outside Scottsdale. They come here for the summers basically. So yeah,
that's the ideal life. So I grew up in Scottsdale. And I know. Where are they?
They are in a tiny town called Carefree.
Oh, yeah. I love Carefree. I love it. I mean, Cave Creek and Carefree are just because they retain that sort of Old West feel, but they still have sort of the nice parts of Scottsdale, you know? Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe out there or here. I'll see you one day.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, @withZibbyandTracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Enjoy the show.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.